Bernie Moreno is looking out for himself, not us. Moreno is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Moreno has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Spend my dollar.
It's not about what you want. It's about what you're willing to do to get it. Run it again.
Hello and welcome.
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
When you give me a hard time.
For the listeners that didn't get to go.
This is the payback.
Alabama wins!
What you did last year really doesn't matter.
Our goal is to have the kind of team that nobody wants to play.
Hi.
Hello and welcome to a Western Kentucky Breakdown Part 2 edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Alabama swarm defense lived up to its name. Batting passes, interceptions, physical tackles, and wave after wave of players. So many players. Let's talk about the defensive line. Alabama's depth was immediately apparent. By my count, 11 defensive linemen logged at least one tackle. So that's at least 11 logging a stat. That's not necessarily the full number that played. 11's a big number across the defensive front. I don't think under Saban we would play 11 defensive linemen when we did wholesale sort of rotations in a blowout. Now, certainly this was a blowout, and certainly we had some wholesale rotations. But we played a lot of these guys early in the game. We're talking these guys registering tackles. There were four pass deflections originating from Alabama's defensive front, again, which speaks to getting some penetration, getting their hands up, playing with some tenacity, and having, you know, willing an impact on the game. And I think that's phenomenal. A couple of names, we're not going to call everyone out, but a couple of names that sort of jumped out to me. LT Overton had four tackles. I just thought he looked disruptive, and which is really what we're going for out of sort of that bandit position. And with his size and strength combination, sort of his metrics, that's what we want. We want that to be a disruptive position. The Alabama coaches do. And I thought he played certainly well Saturday. And when he plays with that high of a motor, he's going to put up numbers. You could say, well, only four tackles. Yeah, that's fine. He's going to have it with that kind of performance. He's going to have a six sack or a six tackle, you know, two sack or three TFL kind of day when you play with that kind of motor. So that's going to be impressive to watch. I bet his numbers go up as Alabama faces a team that's more willing to run the ball. So LT Overton, I thought, looked very good. James Smith, hand raised, was not in my two deep, but he had two pass deflections, which I thought was pretty impressive. Again, Alabama defensive line had a total of four, and James Smith, again, not in my two deep, he had two of them. I had an interesting thought about all the pass deflections, and again, the TV commentators didn't mention it, and I'm not seeing any articles published about it, but, Dusty Dvorak, he would talk about, oh, it's just, you know, you get your hand up, you know, you're not going to get home to the quarterback, so you get your hand up and narrow those passing lanes. And that's true. Of course that's true. But what's interesting is the quarterback is 6'7". TJ Finley's 6'7". And so you normally think of, well, the quarterback's short, and so he's going to have a lot of batted balls. And you think, well, a taller quarterback is going to have fewer batted balls. Again, that's sort of the conventional wisdom, and you hear short quarterbacks sort of talked about in those ways. And so when you have a quarterback that's 6'7", you shouldn't expect to have four batted passes. And so now some of the pass breakups, you could say, well, they're DBs and they're batting the ball. But I think Deontay Lawson had a batted ball. And so that's more sort of box forward. And so you're batting it, you know, from flight as opposed to batting it from nearly being caught. I consider those two different types of pass deflections. And so a big old defensive lineman getting his mitt up, doesn't even know who the ball is going to, is very different than a DB that's, you know, sort of in the hip pocket and reaches out and sort of bats the ball down. And so for Alabama to have four of those, and again, five if you want to count linebacker Lawson, then that's pretty dang impressive. And for what may be multiple non-impressive stats for TJ Finley, for my money, that might be the worst. So we'll see. Didn't hear Coach Helton's interview talk about that. And limited inches in newspaper speak, but in limited sort of ink spilled on that topic from all the media outlets. And so I just found that interesting. The Wolves, I thought, showed up. Quay Rousseau started ahead of Quandarius Robinson. I thought they would go. I thought Quay would be second to Q, Quandarius, but Quandarius came in on and very early in the game, had a sack, I think, on a third and long. And Quay Rousseau had four tackles, and he had a tackle for loss. Both very, very productive. Both demonstrate, we talked about, hey, we've got potential drop-off out of this position, specifically this position. Now, we called it a linebacker, but it was a walk-up, and now we're calling it a wolf, and we're saying that it's a lineman, and that's fine, but it's the same position. It's the intent of the position, you know, go get quarterback is essentially the same. And so it's interesting, you know, where is that production going to come from? And we saw a little bit of a hint of that. Quandarius with the sack, and then Quay Rousseau, he just looked really good. And he stepped back into coverage a couple times. He looks very, very versatile, very, very fluid athletically. And so the fact that Ty fans got to see him, I would expect that we'll see much more of him as the season progresses. The Thames played well, both. Otis played well. Talked about him getting a pass deflection. John Morin, they all looked good in mobile. So many names, so many players across the Alabama defensive front. And we predicted that there would be a lot of players play at the defensive line position, and the depth itself would become a weapon. My question is, how productive will they be, especially early on? And again, maybe it's the wrong opponent to make too many judgments, but I will say that the defensive line played better than I thought that they might. Let's give a couple more weeks and see what sort of the trend line looks like after some tougher opponents. Yeah, I was very pleased with the performance of the defensive front. Let's talk Alabama linebackers. And I think they did what we would expect them to do. Deontay Lawson is a leader back there. He had nine tackles, and we've already talked about his pass breakup. Jihad Campbell also had nine tackles, six of which were solo. He is just a beast at that linebacker position. Played fast, aggressive, all over the field. He is quite an athlete at that linebacker position. And Justin Jefferson, he may be as fast of a linebacker as we've seen at Alabama in quite some time. I think he had two tackles, so he wasn't really registering on the stat sheet. And he had fewer reps, but he just looked really athletic moving around out there. And so I anticipate more and more he's going to be a contributor out of the linebacker position for the Tide defense. And the defensive backs, if I were to rate what's my single biggest surprise going into the game, it's the secondary. I expected there to be busts, and I expected the opponent to make big plays. I thought this could be the matchup of the game, a fast-paced, air raid-style passing attack against a secondary that is replacing so many players that have portaled out or went to the NFL. And all of the guys in are either, you know, brand new transfers or freshmen or guys that just haven't played a whole lot. And I expected there to be some growing pains. That's not to say that there still won't be, but I expected some of those to present Saturday against the Toppers. And they absolutely did not. They played, the secondary did, played very, very well, played just, I thought, very cohesive, except for, and when DeBoer says, hey, put stuff on film, we're going to go back and coach it up, Well, one of the things on film, and I think ESPN could do a 30 for 30 on this, the 21-play drive that the Toppers had. During that play, I went back and broke down sort of the guts of that play. T.J. Finley, on that drive, 21-play drive, completed 12 of 17 passes. T.J. Finley was more productive, you know, passing attempts and completions on that one drive than Milroe was for the day. Now, fortunately, he didn't have three touchdowns on that drive. That would have been a trick. But nonetheless, in terms of attempts and completions, he outpaced Milroe. Certainly not on yardage either. It's a possession. So what we're saying is a lot of short passes. On that 21-play drive, there were 6 third downs. There was not a first down that didn't require at least a third down. There was no first down. There was no first down, second down, first down. It was 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3. Or there were 3 fourth down plays, including the turnover on downs, which was a run that didn't achieve the line of scrimmage or didn't achieve the line to make. And that ended the drive in just the shadow of the Alabama end zone. So that drive, 21 plays, 12 completed passes, 6 plays on third down. 3 of those went to fourth down. The other 3 converted. So a 50% conversion rate on third downs. And then 2 of the 3, so 66% conversion rate, 2 of the 3 fourth downs converted. So holy cow. Like I said, you could do a whole study on that drive. And to have, you know, 12 completions, even with these shorter passes, that reflects on the secondary. And so the single biggest surprise that there were no busts, but there were these little plays that could have been, that can be tightened up and will be tightened up by the coaching staff. And so there's a great opportunity. I love when it's sort of a coach's delight when you can get onto the team around keen coaching points. Oh, and also it didn't show up in the scoreboard and sort of burn you losing a game. And so it's sort of a coach's delight to win 66-0 and still have all kinds of stuff that you can talk to your team about. And this drive is certainly one of those. Lots of room to improve, but a very compelling start for what I considered and what many considered to be the biggest, maybe I didn't consider it, I thought it was the defensive line, but many considered the secondary to be the biggest concern on the team. And while some of that flashed, there were no big busts, no embarrassingly bad plays, and a lot of tightening up we can do. It's amazing the number of players that contributed in the secondary. Again, by my count, there were 10 defensive backs that recorded a tackle. And so you can play and not record a tackle and not record a stat, but you still played. And so I'm counting 10 that recorded tackles. That likely means there were several others that also played but did not record a stat. So that's pretty dang impressive. Damani Jones started at one corner, Zabian Smith at the other. We thought that Zabian would be the starter at the other corner position before the season was over, but for him to come do it week one speaks to how well he has played. Malachi Moore, we all love Malachi Moore. And every time I think Malachi Moore, I think, thank God for Malachi Moore coming back this season. And in Keon Saab, the transfer from Michigan, he had 2 interceptions, 2 big interceptions. One he almost took to the house. I think that was his biggest regret of the game, is that he wasn't able to, but he had 60-some-odd yard return. Pretty dang impressive. His intuition, his ability to read a play and step in front of the ball looked very, very good. Only one of which did I think was just a bad quarterback throw. I think Keon was just in position and the ball just came to him. And then the other time I thought he read the play really, really well and was able to pick it off. And then the Husky, Devonta Smith, he was the other starter. So many other players played. I couldn't have kept up with all the players who played had I been in the stadium doing nothing but watching the secondary players. And so watching it on TV was just so much more challenging to keep up with the secondary players. Red Morgan played very, very well. He was picked on a couple of times, but I thought he acquitted himself very well. Jalen Mbakwe, this kid is going to be a star. He looked very good. Saw some Zay Mincy in there. Bray Hubbard had a couple of tackles. He looks like a physical safety style player. He's going to be fun to watch. Cam Howard, Deshaun Jones, and Jahil Early, Hurley also got some run. So that's exciting to see. This is the team. We talked about the 21-play drive. Kind of joke about that a little bit, but there's some definitely some stuff that needs to be cleaned up. This is the unit, if I compare to the line and the linebackers, this is the unit that of the three that has the most growth required, and it is so well positioned to pay off on that. It's so well positioned to deliver. I feel so confident. I'll double down. I said by the end of the season, the secondary will be recognized as the strength of the defense. And Saturday, even that drive did nothing dissuade me from that. If they had given up a big bust for a touchdown, I would still, because I expected them to. The fact that they didn't and contributed to a shutout in the way that they did, boy, I just think this unit has a chance to be spectacular as these youngsters get more and more and more reps. DeBoer is going about building depth very differently than Saban did. Saban built depth in practice, and then you might see them on the field. And DeBoer says, we're going to practice, and we're going to prep, and then we're going to put them out there and let them get reps. I think it's Womack that says experience is finite. There's only so many snaps, and you either have them or you don't. You either have some of that experience or you don't. And so if you practice everybody but only play a few, then that live fire game experience is sequestered only to those players. And I just think the philosophy that DeBoer, the philosophy that Womack is bringing to the table is experience is finite, let's spread it. And I think that's going to be exciting to watch play out. Let's talk about special teams. Graham Nelson, transfer kicker, was 7 of 7 on PATs. He had no field goal attempts. There were no field goal attempts from the Alabama squad. Connor Talty came in relief, and he had two. He was 2 of 2 on PATs. Interestingly, Connor Talty handled the kickoffs, and so I think that's a function of leg strength. I had heard that Graham Nelson, while incredibly accurate, his leg is not as strong as what we're used to with Will Reichard, and that as soon as Talty was introduced as Alabama is kicking off the game, as well, that speaks to leg strength. And so Graham Nelson, I think, is going to be a very accurate kicker on some of your shorter field goals. And if we ever have to line up to kick a 54-yarder to take the lead or to ice a game, then my guess is Connor Talty will kick it. And we'll see. Hopefully, we're never quite in that position. But if we ever kick a long one, it will be interesting to see which kicker comes in and sort of what the line is. Again, I don't think anyone asked that question on Saturday. There were no field goal attempts, but I imagine in a week or two, someone will ask that. What is Nelson's range versus where would Talty come in and kick? So I predict that question.
Bernie Marino is looking out for himself, not us. Marino is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Marino has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask New People, AskNewPeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
James Burnup looked phenomenal punting. He was 3 for 152 yards, so he had almost a 51-yard average, and he had a long of 54. Man, I tell you, his freshman year, I wasn't so sure. It's the kid from down under, highly regarded, and I wasn't so impressed. But every year, he's gotten better and better and better, and he's an All-America punter. And I think he's going to have a phenomenal year. And I think we're going to see even longer than 54s. And I think we're going to see his average sort of gravitate in that way. You know, so averages are funny because when you have short kicks or you're trying to pin them inside the five or something, that can screw up your averages. But he's going to boot that ball. And I think he's going to have a really healthy average. He's going to be certainly a fun one to watch. I think his average is going to be up over 50. And you contend for Ray Guy awards when you punt like that. There were no kickoff returns, which you can argue, well, they only had one chance, and I guess it would have either been, well, I think we deferred, so it would have been the opening kick to start the second half, but there was no return, and so I consider that good. You get a discount on the field when you don't try to return it. Take the discount and move on. Punt returns, Cole Adams was 5 for 42. He had a long of 12. And I'm going to tell you this. There was a commentary in sort of one of the groups that we have with our listeners that said, "Hey, he looked like he was making some aggressive decisions." And maybe he was. Maybe he was. He went out and tried to catch every ball. He didn't let anything sort of land on its own. Maybe he had a fair catch. Maybe he could have had a couple more fair catches. But Cole Adams, I'm going to tell you who Cole Adams is. Cole Adams is the guy you watch, the guy you see when you're watching another team play. And I've seen this in comment boards. I've seen this in some of our get-togethers with listeners, or even on our sort of virtual tailgates. And normally we sort of pick on Georgia for this, but it's other teams as well, where they have a guy that is their punt returner, and that's maybe all he does. It's close to all he does, but he's just so dang good at it. He looks natural and has big plays, and it's not the feature star player at another position that you don't want to risk. It's not your feature sort of headline performer at another position, corner or, you know, wide receiver, even I've seen running backs back there. It's just a guy. It seems like just a guy. And I don't mean that as a pejorative. I'm just saying it's not one of your headliners. And the guy's good. And eventually you see him break one. Eventually you see him sort of flip the field and set up a go-ahead score or sort of that second or third possession that kind of puts the game out of way. You see it just enough. And you think, why can't Alabama get one of those guys? Like, why? I don't understand. And I think it's coaching philosophy. And I think Cole Adams is that guy. I think he's that guy. He's that caliber, that kind of guy. And he's going to have 12-yard punt return every week. And he's going to have a 40-yard 1 week. And he's going to return probably one for a touchdown before the season's over. And we're going to look back and say, this guy made a material impression on the game. Coach talks about every 10 yards is a first down. Every 100 yards is a touchdown. Well, you know, and there's truth to that. It's math. So 5 for 42 is 4 first downs. So that's pretty dang impressive. And I think Cole Adams is going to be fun to watch at that position this season. So we'll see how that plays out. All right. Next up for the Tide, South Florida comes to town. The Bulls come to town, and I'm going to tell you what. There's payback in the air. I think there's players on this roster that will say, "Let's win this one for Jalen." Jalen sat out. He was held out. Jalen Milroe was held out last year against this team. And while Alabama could have lost the game last year, Alabama never put it away, although I never felt like we were at a threat to lose watching the game. It was just an ugly game. And it was the rain, and it was in Tampa. Just not a lot of good about it. And then Jalen didn't get to play. And Buckner just looked atrocious. And nothing got going for the Tide. And it was just like, let's just get out of here as quickly as we can. And I think there's some resentment for this game from players on the staff. And the fact that Jalen didn't get to play. And I think the players rallied around Jalen coming out of this game. And Milroe's the clear starter the rest of the way. I think there's some payback that those players have, this team has, for South Florida, in the person of South Florida. South Florida played well. Their quarterback looked really good last year, and he was a youngster, so he's going to be a season's worth of play better. But I just think this Alabama team is going to say, "You're next, South Florida, and we've got an axe to grind with you." I think South Florida is a talent level step up from Western Kentucky, and I think it's going to be a phenomenal test for the Alabama secondary. It's going to be a progressive test. You know, it was an air raid, Western Kentucky style, Conference USA style. And I think this is going to be more of an air raid, South Florida style. It's going to look a lot like Tennessee's offense. This is Tennessee's former offensive coordinator, so they sort of grew up in the same tree. So it's a progressive sort of test and development for the secondary leading up to the Tennessee game, maybe the Missouri game, another team that's going to throw the ball around a little bit. So this is going to be a great game for the secondary to improve and demonstrate that improvement on the field, which I predict that they will. I think I saw a line, it's like 29.5, Alabama covers, whatever the number is, Alabama covers. And again, it's payback, it's win-win for Jalen, and Jalen will have another big day Saturday against South Florida. Well, we sure hope you enjoyed the episode and in the breakdown of Western Kentucky. A little two-parter here. If you did, go ahead and just leave us a 5-star review. We so greatly appreciate it. It helps people find us. If you enjoy what we're doing, then share and a 5-star review. We love comments. We'll try to get those onto the air. Those are methods. Those are ways that you can help us share and grow the program. In the meantime, roll tide. Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a roll tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach? Of course. Roll Tide.
Bernie Marino is looking out for himself, not us. Marino is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Marino has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by AFSCME People, AFSCMEPeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.